Hey, wonderfuls, welcome to episode 551 of the JV Club with my remarkable and wonderful guest, Lane Moore. Lane is a comedian, a writer, wonderful, wonderful books, just all around fantastic, and very much a kindred spirit. If you are not familiar with Lane, I'm sure many of you are, but if you're not, I welcome you into this conversation. She's amazing. Speaking of amazing, I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you from the bottom of my heart and Julian's heart and everyone at Max Fund's heart for making our last Max Fund drive such a success. It was such a great experience, and that is entirely due to you. So thank you so much for supporting the podcast. It just means the world to us, and it's why we're able to do it at all. So thank you. And I think that's it. We'll keep it short, keep it brief, keep it sweet, and let you dive right into this episode with Lane. Are your hands cold right now?
That makes it sound like I'm having a hallucination. Are they in the room with you right now? Yes. They're okay, but I think they've like created their own heat that's made them red. Do you know what I mean? Is this a thing?
Oh my gosh.
What is this?
Yes.
I hate it.
No. The circulation thing is real. I've had like weird inflammation stuff in my hands from... You don't have like an autoimmune by any chance, do you? Because that's where mine comes from.
I have thyroid stuff.
Oh my God, same okay. thing. Do you have Hashimoto's?
So it's hypothyroid. Is Hashimoto's that one, right?
Yeah, underproducing. Underproducing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so no wonder.
Wow.
So right before we started recording, everybody, Lane and I were talking about our weird cold hands and circulation and like how our hands swell up or turn red. And I should have known. I was like, wait a minute, I need to ask this question straight away because it is so common.
I almost said that. I was like, almost no one has this. There's probably an overlap here because I've had it since I was a kid. Like my hands were always freezing. And I remember my lesbian gym teacher being like, something's wrong with you. Like, I don't know why she was holding my hand for some reason, but she was like, ugh.
Why are you a corpse?
Yeah. I was like, this is going to be a lifelong struggle, isn't it? I didn't
Do
know
Do you
that.
Get, because I also, because of all those same things, have like this sort of blotchiness on my upper arms. My upper arms like don't circulate well. And so there's this sort of like what my endocrinologist describes as a lacy pattern, which I was like, oh, that sounds so pretty. It's not pretty at all.
So I don't think I have that I know of.
Okay, good. This is good.
But I know I do try to do like a dry brush.
Uh-huh.
Just because I feel like stuff does get stuck there, even though it doesn't have a Victorian lace pattern, whatever he said or they said. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. This is because that's the other thing. I remember when I was younger, I had friends, especially fair haired female friends who had like they would complain that like the hair on right there would like it was like rubbing off or that it was shorter or something. And then it turned out that that's something that is like very common with thyroid stuff, too. And I think it's only just starting to happen to me for whatever reason.
I didn't know that. And also, I have no hair on my upper arms. I am like a weirdly hairless being. And I don't know if that has anything to do with the...
It might.
With the thyroid stuff. I have no idea. I've never found an endocrinologist I've liked. So...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you like yours. I'm like...
Well, first of all, I do really like him. Although the first time I went to see him... was, oh my God, like 15 years ago, and he was very handsome, and he had like this sort of Hugh Grant hair, and I remember, and you know, I was not like an old lady 15 years ago, and still, I remember going in, and I'm like, have the verbal vomit, like, can't not say what's on my mind thing.
Yes.
So I was like, you're very handsome. This is uncomfortable for me.
You said it!
Yeah, I was like, you're very dashing. I mean, I wasn't, it's not in like a I was attracted to him way, because
no,
I,
it was a blur. It was
taste.
A blur. Yeah.
Because this is a person who's going to be like, and how are your stools?
No, but the reason that I'm so fascinated by this is because I have had several hot doctors. They were all women, all women. I had a hot optometrist. I had a hot primary care doctor. I was like, are you straight out of the L word? And I have to tell you about weird stuff with my butt? Like, and I wouldn't tell her.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh, no, everything's cool. I've never had a hemorrhoid in my life, ever. Not me. Totally. Couldn't be. Doing great there. All the places. Yeah. And I was like, this isn't good for you. You
can't. I know. Why can't they at least let them sort of, can't they go up a little bit just for, you know, our sake?
You're right. Yeah, something I really. Something in your nose. You could do little things. I don't know.
100%. 100%.
Something in the teeth. I don't know.
Yeah, just give me a little something, a pinch of something.
Yeah.
I think he is like very Hollywood in the sense that I want to say he has a podcast.
Yeah.
But that was not, but like, you know, that's inevitable.
You're that hot and you're a doctor and you need a podcast. Why? You're already getting attention from all the places. That's always my suspicion.
I know. And you would think that I would stop going to him, but I will say he won me over.
Wow.
And then it turned out that he had a similar like neck issue. He has like the same like herniated discs in his neck that I have.
Oh.
And once we bonded on that a handful of years ago, I was like, oh, good. Because he talks about being like, I feel like an old man. Like as soon as he humanized himself to be like, ugh, yeah, I feel like I can't do anything anymore. And like, I get so uncomfortable just sitting in a chair. I was like, you're fine. We're fine.
Oh, life has ever given you a problem. Okay. This is, yes, I can actually talk to you.
To go.
But you know what?
Yeah.
The tough thing is, I'm like, okay, you also, you're hot and you're a doctor. It just keeps getting hotter and you're actually good at what you do. It's too much.
I know.
I don't know.
I know.
Good for you for just blurting it out. What did he say? Was he like, I get this every day?
That was the other thing. Again, I would never have been with him that long if he hadn't just like laughed very goofily. Like I might have tried to simplify it and isolated it and been like, you have extremely nice hair.
Yeah.
Like you have like Hugh Grant hair. Like, who, me? I'm just a doctor.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I think he like laughed and like made fun of himself or something. I was like, okay, all right. You're all right.
Is he actually British or no?
Not at all.
I was going to say that's too much.
Not at all.
There's too much.
He looks like he could be. But yeah, the whole kind of like golden child thing is not me. Meeting people like that in a professional capacity, particularly medical capacity, I feel like I'm getting such a peek inside of something. Like, okay, so this is a whole like species of people that I did not grow up with, did not go to school with, and do not know except in this capacity.
Yeah, I don't understand it at all. And then it almost makes you feel even weirder when you're coming in to talk about problems you're facing.
Yeah.
You're like, I bet you've never had these. You think I'm really weird, don't you? Like just
totally.
All
that's something for the, I mean, like, yeah, to be so successful and accessible and still be that much of a specimen, they're doing something right because I do feel like it's working against them. I feel like it's something that's working against them.
I don't know, because I'll kind of stay until, I don't remember when I switched with like my really hot doctor now. My doctor now is hot enough. And again, I really want to note these are all women and non-binary people. I have literally never had a hot male doctor.
Yeah.
I've always just been like, I feel weird.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't believe you.
I've never had, so never, not once. That's all the more reason why I'm like, wow.
I know.
The one that I had that was like too hot and I like just could not tell her anything. I don't know what happened, but I thought about leaving. I either thought about like, and then I also fantasized about like, okay, if I switch doctors, then on the last day, I have to shoot my shot. I have to be like, hey, like, so I know it's like totally not ethical, even if I express my interest.
Right.
However, what if,
yeah,
looking at all sides, I said I'm into you now and I've already switched my primary care. And then I was like, you're never going to remotely try to do that. And if it goes even a little wrong, it's going to ruin me for weeks. So I didn't do it. I just left.
Yeah. I mean, you probably made the right decision, but
I did.
Because I'll say this too, like, because if you're starting off with the feeling of that much imbalance, like, are you just going to carry that into dating someone? Or is it going to be like, remember how I was too attracted to you and you're too cool and amazing and I had to leave and I couldn't see you and now we're dating? How'd that happen?
Well, and I don't know if you've, you know, different circumstances for sure, but I don't know if you've dated people who had that with you. And it's weird where you date somebody who was like familiar with your work before they met you or whatever, or like you kind of try to explore that. And that was always something that was weird for me, where it was like sometimes somebody who like knows a bunch about you and is like, oh, you're so great. You're so great. And you're like, oh, this is like, that's very nice. But this is a weird dynamic we've got to get out of real fast.
Yes.
Because I'm not like, I think men tend to be real into that. A lot of guys tend to be real into that. And they tend to pick partners who are like, you're so great. And I'm a woman. I don't want that.
Yeah, I think that's something. I think that that has happened a couple of times. But the only reason that it sort of worked was that the person sort of inherently knew, like, this is not going to do me any favors to, like, be that overly familiar or to, like, reference things that, you know what I mean? You have to, like, and I would say it was never anybody who, like, to use this as an example, listen to my podcast, because then I do feel like that's this place where we get to know people on a deeper level. Like, I definitely have friends that had that parasocial relationship with now where I kind of can't listen to their podcast anymore because because now I need the information from them directly. Otherwise, it just feels kind of different. I just feel kind of dumb being like, hey, I heard you mention that you went to the doctor on your podcast. Like, I don't know. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's just I feel awkward feeling like, oh, we didn't have a one-on-one conversation about this, but I still have the information. But also, like, tens of thousands of other people have that same information. I don't know. Like, so
but
finding
I know you
that,
in a different way, so it's okay that I ask you this, but it still feels like I'm a fan after a show being like, how is the doctor? But I'm not.
It's all very, it gets a little convoluted. And I feel like I've found, like, there are friends of mine that listen to the podcast, and I am totally cool with them saying that and like reaching out to me and being like, hey, you know, I listen to your podcast. Like, what's going on with blah, blah, blah. On that end, it doesn't bother me. But yes, if I tried to date someone who was like, I've listened to all 550 of your episodes, I know so much more about you than you know about me.
Yes, that's literally what it is.
Versus like, I saw you in a thing and you were good and you played a character and that doesn't mean I know all the stuff about you. You know?
That's literally what it is. It's like, I can't, and I don't know. This happened to me, like, especially after my first book came out, and like I had talked about so much, like, really deep heavy shit, and it's like funny too, but all this stuff that, like, I hadn't even told a lot of, like, my friends at the time necessarily. And there were people who are like, oh my god, I read your book, I want to be friends. And I'm like, at first I was like, oh my god, great, somebody who, like, knows all these things and understands me and, like, gets it. And, you know, like, when you tell somebody, even like a friend, some, like, intense stuff that's happened to you, you're like, are they gonna still like me? And so some part of your brain is like, oh, they already know this stuff. And of course they still like me. That's nice. And then it took me a second to be like, oh, these friendships based on this are actually harder, potentially,
right?
Because they know so much more about me than I know about them. And it feels really vulnerable. And yes, maybe we will be friends. But just having somebody who knows that much about you and you don't know anything about them. And then, so, like, you have these two things that are happening that don't happen in a friendship if you meet in another way, where it's like that person has created some idea of you that's probably mostly right, but I don't know what it is. I don't know what you think you're getting. I don't know what you're expecting or hoping for, or what I might disappoint you if I don't show up as.
Yeah.
And then the bigger problem for me was I didn't know who this person was, and I had assigned all this empathy to them, like, oh, you relate to this thing I've done and this book I wrote, so you must be, like, this really empathetic, like, really kind person who's, like, probably been through similar things. And then I would find out, like, they didn't really have much empathy at all and hadn't really been through anything and, like, just really liked the book.
Right.
And so it's, like, all these things, like, you don't know what someone's relating to, and then you're, like, diving, like, I always think of, there's this old Fiona Apple interview, and I'm obsessed with her and always have been. And she was like, I thought when I wrote my first album, everyone would like it and want to be my friend, and, like, they'd finally understand me, and, like, that didn't really happen. And that's, like, I get it, because it's like, you really think, like, if I show these parts of myself and I meet someone who's like, oh my god, I love it.
Yeah.
But you don't know what they love.
Yeah.
You don't know what they understand or relate to. They might just be like, she's zany, I like it. And that's, like, where it bottoms out. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah.
God, that makes so much sense. And also, like, here you have, you know, I'm not to, like, isolate anything we're talking about to, for example, Tinder Live, which is where I just last saw you at Sketchfest.
Yeah.
But you're also, like, talking about the sort of, existence of dating in this, in this weird context anyway, where there's a sort of presentational quality to, like, how much am I presenting to someone before they even meet me, and how much of that is going to end up being a true connection versus like a hookup versus, you know, this is somebody that I never would have thought I would have connected with. Thank God we met on the real world instead of on a dating app, because none of this stuff was represented there. Like, that's all such a clusterfuck too, in terms of literally, like, how people meet each other now.
Yeah, it's, well, and honestly, when I try to, because one of the biggest questions I get asked, like, in terms of Tinder Live is, like, do I online date? And I, you know, or like, do you know, do I use apps anymore? And I had to stop, because every single person I match with, I mean, not everyone, but enough that it was almost every single one, was like, so am I on Tinder Live right now? And I'm like, okay, on one level, this is cool that, like, this many people know about the show and they're fans of it. Like, that's rad. And it's cool that this guy's seen it, whatever. But at the same time, again, immediately I was like, anything I say now, I just worried, and it probably wasn't true, but I just worried that anything I said now, if it didn't work out well, if I didn't like him, he'd be like, oh, yeah, I matched with her once. She blew me off. You know what I mean? Then you become somebody's party anecdote.
Of course.
And it could have been the nicest guy in the world. And I just was like, I don't want to be your, like, oh, yeah, I matched with her. And then they, like, invent some, you know, we talk for 2 seconds and it's like, she was kind of a bitch, or like,
oh my gosh,
I don't think anyone would ever say that. But just that, ugh, all right, we're already starting on this thing that, like, now I'm a little nervous.
Yeah, there's a level of, like, mild tension that's just gonna live there, and for probably a lot longer than it helps whatever connection you might be forging with someone. So I completely get that.
And I will say, because I just remembered this, so years ago I dated a woman who I didn't realize until, like, when we, like, matched, I didn't realize that we followed each other on Twitter, and she didn't mention it when we, on our first date, she didn't mention it. And she was like, I didn't want to mention it, I didn't want to freak you out, but, like, I had followed you for, like, a long time. I didn't even remember following her. I think she was somebody I followed, like it wasn't somebody I knew that I followed at all. But she was like, yeah, I followed you on Twitter and you were, like, my Twitter crush. And I'm like, you didn't tell me any of this on our first date, and I'm glad you didn't.
Yes. Because yes. I was going to say, I hope that you were happier about
that. It's so much cuter
now.
Yeah. Totally. It was so much cuter after that. I was like, oh, that's kind of a rom-com.
Yes.
And she was like, I couldn't believe we matched and you, like, messaged me. Oh, my God. But she didn't say any of this on our, like, messages or even on the first date. And it was like, yeah, just let it be.
Yeah, you have to hold that back. That's exactly what I experienced also. It was like, thank you for holding that back, because at the end of the day, that's not, you know, so intimate or that it's weird. It's just, like, kind of a fun, like, aww. Opposed to, like, I've read your book 17 times.
Yes, exactly.
Underlined certain passages. I have a lot of questions I'd like to ask you.
And yeah. I've been watching you closely for 15 years. Whatever. But I will say, I've, like, talked to people who I was familiar with their work, and I have had little moments of, like, how much should I say? Because I don't want to pretend I don't know who this person, like, I'm not familiar with their work at all.
Right.
And
yes.
You know what I mean? You don't want to just be like, what is it? I don't even know. And, like, be too cool or too aloof or something.
Yeah.
But then there are some things too. Like, sometimes I think about hypotheticals with, like, if I get a crush on, like, a celebrity or something, I'm like, if I ever met them, would I tell them that I never saw their, like, most famous thing they're known for project? Would they think that was annoying or be like, thank God?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I think, if I was in love with, like, oh my God, I can't even think of his name. I'm not, like, a huge Harry Potter fan. I've never seen it. Uh-huh. And I'm like, if I ever met one of, like, the Harry Potter guys and I was like, I've literally never seen that. Like,
I think they would think it was
that's
great.
Hot.
Yeah.
I
think
so
they
do
would
I.
think it was totally great. I mean, for sure. And there's definitely a bunch of stuff like that, where, and even, like, friendships where you don't, you know, you meet somebody and you're like, I don't know this thing that everyone, and sometimes it's even like, now things are so genrefied that, like, I'll meet somebody and really hit it off somewhere and have no idea that they do this thing that is massive. And then, same. Like, the first time you're ever with someone on the street, people are coming up to them asking their pictures and you're like, oh, there was an element here that I didn't have any sense of at all.
Know.
And I think that's great. You know what I mean? Like,
I
that's
do too.
All,
I think it's...
That's, like, because, you know, we all, you know, you're like, for all the reasons that you said, you're like, boy, I'm just a human being. I'm just a messy human being. Yeah. And, you know, like the opportunity to get to know me one on one is still so much different and more valuable than just the me that's out there that you could, you're not, you know, that you can't give anything back to me kind of relationship.
Yeah. Dude, and it's also, I don't know if you had this growing up, but it's also still, I think there's some wounds from like being the funny friend mm-hmm. who like wasn't allowed to talk about real shit that was going on in mm-hmm. my life because I was the one who was like had the funny stories. But like, I don't know. I look back at some of the funny stories I told and they're always like pretty dark. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Like, and like they're all like little cries for help in some ways too. Mm. But I do. I remember that being a big part of it where it was like, oh, well, come back to us when you have like another zany story or whatever. Mm. And I was like, this sucks. And so I think maybe there's a little bit of that too.
That totally makes sense.
Right. Where you're like, oh, like you like, I mean, you know, there's a lot of real shit in my comedy and in my work and stuff too. But it's like, oh, do you want like me on stage? Because like that's still very much a part of me. I'm not a comedian who has like a character and then off stage you meet me and I'm like wildly different. I don't have that. I almost wish I did. Mm. So there was more separation, right. But there's not.
Right.
You know, and then like when you're trying to be friends with somebody or date somebody or whatever, you're like, you know, like no person's ever just going to be that, right? That's okay, right?
Totally. Like,
are you going to like the actual human other stuff that I think's really cool too? Or yeah. Do you literally just want that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have to dig too deeply into teenage stuff, but just contextually, mm-hmm. because you mentioned it, can we give like a vague location of where you were a teenager and where you kind of stayed? Did you stay in that one place through high school years?
I went to high school mostly in hell. Yeah. That's a vague. It was not a good time. You know, my high school was too big. Mm-hmm. It was too big. I've heard a lot of people went to high schools where there were like 100 people.
Right.
And they were like, it sucks because everybody knew each other. But I don't know, man. In some way, did you go to a tiny high school?
No, I didn't at all. To be honest with you, I'm so bad about, I can't believe I have a podcast that I've had for this long and I still couldn't tell you like the size of my school. It was a big school. I mean, it was a regular public high school. And then there was another high school that shared the campus. So it was a big space. But at the same time, I'm like, well, I can tell you that classrooms usually had like 30 to 40 kids in them. So I don't know if that, you know, how does that break down to like, it's not like we had 60 person classes, but we certainly didn't have 15 person classes. You know what I mean?
I only realized that I went to a big school when I think after high school, and someone was like, oh my God, that's too many. And I was like, oh, okay, interesting. And I, you know, it did feel like that to me in so many ways because, like, I look back and there was a lot of neurodivergent shit that, like, didn't get diagnosed. Mm. And, like, I just really having trouble focusing. And I was either, like, light years beyond everybody else in a subject I really cared about, like English, psychology, sociology, I was, like, blowing them away. But any other subject, if I didn't give a shit about it, I was like failing it. And like now I look back and I'm like, oh yeah, that's like a lot of like ADHD stuff.
Sure.
And like you needed help in this way that like you didn't kind of get. So it's frustrating, I think. But you know, and just trying to kind of find the friends that like you see on TV and then you kind of have them for a little while. But I think like for me, the biggest thing about like there are two things about wishing I came maybe was at a smaller school was one, yeah, having teachers be able to like pay attention to you and and see you and like teach you, because I didn't really get that until senior year where there was a teacher who was like, oh my God, you're like my best student in these classes and I'm like so impressed by you, but then you're failing this other class I teach. And then like we had a conversation and he was like, it was like a Goodwill Hunting conversation where he was like, oh God, she's a genius. And I'm like, well, I'm glad you realize that I'm not just like this person who doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And then you just kind of throw me away, which I think happens to a lot of kids.
Sure.
If there's not enough kid, you're kind of like, I don't know. And thank God he taught both classes, because otherwise he would have done what like I think a lot of teachers did, which is just like, I don't know, she doesn't pay attention, she makes jokes, she sucks. And it was like, ugh.
Yeah.
That's not, I feel like they wouldn't do that now as much, but I don't even know. But and the other thing too was like with theater stuff, where it was like there were so many people and like I wanted to do that stuff, but it was like, oh, you were never going to get in. It had to be the popular kids. It was the same three people every year. You didn't stand a chance. And it was like, I always watch TV shows wherever there's like a, or whenever I see this on Wikipedia and they're like, they were, and I don't know if you were, maybe you were, and I'm about to say this, but people are like, oh yeah, they were the class clown. And I'm like, what? I feel like, were you the class clown?
Was I the class clown? No,
like, in the yearbook or whatever.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, okay.
Definitely not. I don't think I did enough to even really be in the yearbook.
No.
I mean, I did theater.
I just didn't want to get bullied.
But yeah.
I was just like, please don't bully me. I'm going to be quiet away from here. I'm going to do whatever I can do to like, please don't be mean to me.
Yeah. There were certainly classes where I'd be like, I got a zinger and I'm just going to say it. Do you know what I mean?
Same.
But yeah, I don't think anyone would characterize me as that.
Right. But I always, when I see, like, you know, whoever it is, I remember, like, Sandra Bullock has one superlative, or, like, most likely to be successful or whatever. Like, I don't think I was not on anybody's radar.
Yeah.
For, like, she's got it. Like, nobody, like, there were a few people. I was also just so fucking scared, and I was, like, going through so much that I really did just try to be, like, I kind of went into, like, protection, and then the people that you find that you're, like, you know, like I would write funny things and I would do stuff like that. But it was just like finding who that was, who you could be yourself around.
Sure, sure.
And they would like it. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. And did you feel like, because I definitely felt like I had, I mean, it's funny because when I think about like a couple of my high school friends like would listen to this and be like, oh stop, like come on, I never saw that from you, and I'm very glad of that. But I definitely also had like trust issues even just coming in from you know, having those like off, and I don't think I realized until much later that it happens to so many of us, but like having the groups of friends where, and I've talked about this a lot on the podcast, but like they stop talking to you for some reason, you don't know what it is. And I also had like a very tenuous relationship with my mom when I was a very kid, and then through high school.
Yeah.
And so I really was like always just so afraid of being hurt and so afraid of,
very much same.
You know, and now I look at some, again, like I, you know, some of the friendships that I still have from high school, I'm like, oh my God, like these are the dearest people. Thank God I just trusted them and let them, you know, like be in my heart, because it would have been so easy for me to just like keep everyone, you know, at arm's length.
That's so lucky though. I feel like that's, I mean, I don't know. I think that's lucky. I definitely did not meet my people then. I definitely did not. I mean, like there were some people that I'm like so grateful I got to know them at that time.
Yeah.
But I don't know any of them anymore.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think about them sometimes and I feel like, I don't know if we would gel. I'm sure there's some people that I would, but yeah, no, it was a heavy time. And I think for very similar reasons where it was like, I didn't belong at home. I didn't, you know, and then I'm kind of getting bullied at school too. And then you're like, this sucks. And then, yeah, exactly. After you go through that, like, oh my God, your friends become like your tormentors. Where do you go? Yeah, I was very much the same where it was like you're kind of playing it small because you don't want to get hurt again.
Yeah.
And you're just like, how do I? And it's so tough because that's such a, technically that's like a very intelligent thing to do. But then it's also like, ugh, you can miss out on so many things. And I feel like by the time I like let other people in, you know, and I had a kind of a mixed bag results with the next people I let in who were definitely a lot better than the people before. But still, you know, I think I was just a lot mentally, emotionally, because of shit I'd been through, older than everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was like I had just had to become an adult real fast as a kid. And so I'm still hanging out with kids because I'm a kid, but it's like I'm trying to talk about like deeper things and like they can't meet me there because we're not supposed to know about this yet. Like that's not like what an idiot. Like I wasn't supposed to know about that shit yet either.
Yeah.
So it's like I think that was a big hard thing for me for a long time where it was like I met people I could have fun with, but I didn't feel like I met people who like saw me and who I related to. And the thing is, look, I'm sure there was some other person in my high school, some like, you know, who like we were never going to be friends, but we would have been the best friends. Yes, you know what I mean? Who'd like also been through a lot of shit and didn't trust anybody. And, you know, if we were able to trust each other, probably would have been so close.
Right. But it's what are the chances that those two people are going to somehow open up to each other to even be aware that there is that similarity and all that? Where did you did you have like, you know, did you disappear into movies or books or music? Was like, is that what you were sort of, you know, feeling seen by?
In How to Be Alone, my first book, I literally my dedication page is all of the movies, TV, music that like raised me and was like my best friend when I was a kid, when I didn't feel like anybody understood me. And I would dive into these things. And I always love, well, one of the funny things when sometimes when people read it, they're like, I read this and it's very ADHD coded. And I'm like, I never would have remotely guessed that, but thank you and correct. But that was it. You know, I just focused on, I always knew that I wanted to do this, always. Mm. Just like straight out the gate. I was like, I want to be an actor. I want to be a comedian. I want to be a musician. So I used that time to essentially self-study. Like I would lock myself in the bathroom for hours and try to hit every single note that Nina Simone could hit. Mm. Could I hit notes that Heart could hit? Could I hit Celine Dion notes? Breaking down songs and like looking into all these things. And, you know, I would watch stand-up specials and, you know, sketch shows and infomercials and just whatever I thought was funny, and like dating shows, and just for my own, like, I think for lots of reasons, you know, because A, I really loved it, and B, I knew this is what my future would be and I wanted it so much. And I was also really just studying it and like in however I could, where it was like, what can I absorb? What can I get my hands on? And same thing with like reading. I was just voracious with like self-study, essentially. Like school didn't really, I wasn't learning anything that felt relevant to me really. And so I was like, all right, would be cool if I had saved friends, but this show's really cool. This feels like a friend to me. Listening to this artist feels like a friend to me. I feel really connected to this musician. This is great. So it's like, and then the craziest thing, I'm sure you've had this happen too, is like, then you grow up and you like start doing these things and you become friends with some of those people and you're like, what?
Yeah.
Is this that like you were such a touchstone for me? And I don't know that I had enough confidence to be like, we're going to be friends one day. I don't think I had enough confidence to ever think that, really. Because you do hear that where people are like, I always knew we'd be friends. When I was 8, I knew I'd be best friends with Tom Cruise. And now we are. And I'm like, who gave you that fucking guy? I can't relate.
Yes.
But, you know, fortunately, my goals were maybe more reachable for comedians. But it's like, It's the coolest thing when something means that much to you. It wasn't just like, oh, I used to watch your movies and now we're friends. It's like, no, you were like such a part of my identity and my like just this touchstone for me that was like this person. Like somebody gave my books to Fiona Apple years ago and I was like, Fiona Apple has my books in her home. I still don't believe that's real.
Yeah.
My brain has chosen to believe someone lied to me.
Uh-huh.
But like, it's just, I can't absorb it. So I'm like, it's not real.
Yeah. No, but I totally get that. It's nice. I totally get that. But but it's funny because that kind of brings us back around to, because I definitely do have situations like that. And I think, I don't know if this is true for you, but like, there's a sort of, compartmentalization sounds like more intentional and more kind of like a choice than it is. Yeah. But I definitely have friends who I absolutely have that with and had that with as, you know, a high school student. Yeah. And at the time, maybe they were 10 years older or 15 years older. And unfortunately, to the person who's older, because now I'm experiencing it, you're all, you're like, oh, I don't, don't remind me that you were a teenager when I released my first blah, blah, blah. Like, so now, even being on the flip side of it a little bit, I'm like, oh God, it's true that it does make you feel old. But on the flip side, like, you know, speaking of the sort of like talking about, you know, following someone on Twitter and then like not letting that be the gateway to your friendship, because even if the other person that you looked up to is totally open to your previous idol worship, like, you're not mm-hmm. setting yourself up to yes. succeed as a friend. Yep. And so even there are like people I've become friends with who started out as fans, and I've like had to be like, you need to stop quivering right now. I think you're rad. We've exchanged a bunch of emails. You're my peer.
Yes.
Stop looking yes. nervous. Because yes. this, we will never have a friendship if you stop. You have to, like, you know what I mean? And so I think that's yep. something that, you know, I have friends where I'm like, every once in a while, I'll be like, oh my God. And, you know, when you did blah, 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 that was like the most important thing to me then. But it feels comfortable saying that now, because there's this whole sort yeah. of world that exists outside of my previous idol worship, so that it feels more fun and funny and sweet than like, yeah. oh my God, I was so obsessed with you. You know what I mean? So yeah. it's like compartmentalization of like, you can, your 14-year-old self can be super, super excited, but at some yeah. point that person disappears because the person that you're friends with was a huge influence on you or was hugely helpful, but also is just a human being. And then once you get to know them, you're like, oh yeah, you know, you were actually struggling with something then that I had no idea about, that, you know, has brought us closer and made us both more human instead of, you know, this person yeah. that I worshipped or whatever.
Well, and it's I guess the good thing about it too is that when you being able to have the perspective of it in both ways.
Yeah, totally.
Where I'm just like, oh, I'm overthinking this. I'm being so weird around this person who is literally my peer. And, you know, it all for this, like for me, and I'm assuming for you as well, since there's a lot of similarities here. So much of it is like self-esteem too. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's like reminding yourself, like, I am not a 14-year-old child right. talking to a 50-year-old person.
Right. Yes.
I am an adult person who is their peer, and yeah. they want to be my friend. Like, yeah. I know some part of me is still this kid who's like, why? What are you, right. what? Huh? How could, like, but yeah. that's not true anymore. And like, right. how do we kind of soothe that child part of us?
Great
that's
point.
Like, I'm going to mess it up or something. And it's like, it's literally just self-esteem when it comes to that, is like reminding yourself, like, hey, I've actually done quite a few things since that. And even though it would have been weird, I don't know if this example serves, but like, you were cool then too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
if you liked,
I don't know
it, yeah,
that she so. Would have been friends with you as a teenager, because that probably would have been real weird. But like, you were a cool teenager, like just kind of removing that idea that like whatever happened to you, whatever bad things happened to you as a teenager, you like deserved, and they were like right. indicative of your right. worth. It's like, what?
That's yeah.
that was never true. It's definitely not true now. How do we like move
Absolutely.
Past that? Because you're blocking a friendship with this like, fuck whatever they meant to you 20 years ago. It's
yeah.
great,
yeah.
you know, but it's like,
yeah. That just made me think of something very specific, which is, what's cool about what I'm about to tell you is, I mean, I feel like you'll totally relate to this, because I'm sure this has happened to you in friendships also, where I just, like, for example, went through like a handful of people doing like a Twin Peaks rewatch, like old school uh-huh. Twin Peaks, 90s Twin Peaks rewatch. And one of the people I'm doing it with, I also like loved at the same time that I loved Twin Peaks.
Oh.
But they also were a huge nerd for Twin Peaks at the same time. So there's okay. this kind of cool thing where it's like, there's some kind of like, oh my God, we're both geeking out on a thing we were both obsessed with when I was also really into your work. But the fact, yeah. but there's something like that evens out about the fact, like, just to think like, oh, I was buying your album at the same time that I had like a picture of, you know, Sherilyn Fenn on my wall, but you also had a picture of Sherilyn Fenn on your wall. That's where like the sort of meta-ness yes. of like, oh wait, we were both dorks. Like, you were 15 years
know.
Older than me, and you also were a total dork for this thing. Thank you, because now we've brought in this third thing
yeah.
that like
yeah.
evens the playing field in this really cool way. And I think you see that like backstage at like Comic-Cons too, where, you know, I yeah. see people that I like have loved who are a little older than me, and we're also both geeking out on a person who's older than that person
Right. Everybody has it.
So, like, the, I see people all the time being like, dude, I love your work. Oh, my God, that's Shatner. And then the two people who were just like meeting are both freaking out about like this other person. You're like, oh, right. We're all nerds. We're all dorks. Like, yes. We all think we're not worthy of something that we were a fan of. And there's something so like lovely about that, you know?
Yeah. Or seeing the shit that like they're insecure about, and you're like, what are you talking about?
It's
like,
so nice, like, though. Yeah, it is. So it's so like, nice, oh, because okay, it's, got it. It's not based in reality.
No, and you're just like, I don't know. They're not this untouchable person. I don't know. It's a really, I don't even want to say it's a weird thing to navigate, because it is like this really beautiful thing to navigate once you can navigate it. But I think you just, you do kind of have to drop this, like, this person is whatever, because they really are just a person. And I don't know. It's very interesting. And I feel the same thing sometimes when I meet fans, where I'm like, especially when they do the shit that I have done.
Right.
Where they're like, I don't want to bother you. And I don't know, your book means a lot to me. And I'm like, no, you can like stay and take up a couple minutes if you want. Like, do you know that like that means so much to me? Like, I don't know, if I was on fucking Friends or something and I have like $800 million and like I'm so sick of people coming up to me. Yeah. Maybe I'll be like that. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
But like at this point, it's like, it means everything to me to have some, right. It's a fucking gift. Yeah. And it's like, do you know, when you're not at that like wild level yet, how many of us are like wondering, like, I don't know, like, did that mean anything? Did that really happen? Did that, like, do you know what? Like, absolutely. We're so in our own heads.
Yes.
So if you're talking to somebody who you know is like that, and I always, whenever I hear someone say like, oh my God, I've met you another time and you were so nice, and I'm like, how are other people?
Like, I know.
Are
I
other
know.
People like, ugh. But I you think do maybe hear there are people who are like,
they are, yeah.
But I don't feel like that, because I still feel like, you know, I think it's a, I always think of the Fiona Apple thing, where it's like, I know what Fiona Apple was to me. And then when I meet people who talk about me like I'm their Fiona Apple, and I'm like, I think that's on some level, like, I don't even know that I could have articulated it, but I think that's something I always wanted. Yeah. Where it's like, not only are they like a fan of your work, but they feel like you get them when nobody else does.
Yes.
Like, that's absolutely what I wanted. Yeah. That's why I was listening to those. I wanted to be that for somebody who was like watching something at 2 a.m. being like, oh, this is so comforting when everything else in life hurts.
Absolutely.
Like, that's a gift. That's a gift.
Absolutely. I think you're right. And I think if you're a person who went through that and who knew what it felt like to be isolated, which so many of us have, especially creative folks. The idea of being able to, I mean, it sounds so cheesy to be like, I'm giving back. But it's not that. It's just a feeling of like, my life just feel like, you get greedy for that feeling, because you're like, oh my God, I helped someone. Oh my God, I needed that help so badly. And now I'm able to like provide that for someone. Like, that's straight the up. Best feeling in the world, you know?
Yeah, because you remember like, oh yeah, that kind of is who I'm creating shit for. That like definitely is who I'm creating shit for. Because if I wanted, I definitely knew, and I'm sure so many of us saw this, where you're like, oh, I definitely knew that like a cheaper, easier path would be if I was just like kind of a terrible person who just like totally. Did shit that would sell easier, faster, more, better.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh no, like even when I was like writing for The Onion, I was like, I'm going to put in like jokes about domestic violence. Like, I was the only woman there. I was like, I'm going to put in jokes about domestic violence and queer people and make jokes about women that aren't about the fact that they're women. And like, I always wanted to do some shit that hadn't been done. I always wanted to do that, like create the stuff that I felt like needed to exist and write the joke for the person who needed to hear it, instead of like just the ones that were already being done that like were a lot less harder to get made.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, yes, yes.
So
oh
then
my
when
God.
You have somebody be like, thank you for doing that,
you're
like, I really needed to like, like you're like, I'm not trying to cry at like a very normal compliment, but when you think about like that shit's harder to make. It is just harder to make. You
I
know?
Agree. I agree. Oh, you're my sister. Okay. I say as an only child. Okay, we're gonna take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Thanks to everyone who contributed during this year's Max Fun Drive. We truly couldn't do what we do without you. With the drive in the rear view, it's time for another proud tradition, our annual charity pin sale. This year, the proceeds for the pin sale will support Vote Riders, a nonprofit dedicated to expanding ballot access nationwide. Members at $10 a month or more can purchase Max Fun Drive pins featuring shows from across the network, and all members are able to buy our network pin design, exclusive to this charity sale. The sale is live now, and it ends Friday, April 12th. For more info, head to MaximumFun.org/pinsale. And thanks again for your support.
From the twisted minds that brought you The Adventure Zone, Balance and Amnesty and Graduation and Ethersea and Steeplechase and Ultra Space and all the other ones, the McElroy brothers and dad are proud to reveal a bold vision for the future of actual play podcasting. It's called The Adventure Zone versus Dracula.
Yeah, we're going to kill Dracula's
ass. We haven't recorded all of it yet. We will attempt to kill Dracula's ass.
The Adventure Zone versus Dracula.
Yes, a season I will be running using the D&D 5th edition rule set. And there's two episodes out for you to listen to right now. We hope you will join us. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Bats. I see what you did there.
So I got to do this MASH game with you. This is going to be very fun. I want to start with three. Well, I got to start with this because we've been living in this space of feeling seen or feeling heard. Give me three musical artists that are where they're going to write an album that somehow is just intuiting your inside feelings and thoughts. It's like, this is Lane's album. You can play it whenever you want. It can be as heavy or as light as you want. You know, is it a song that is it music that you can just play whenever you're like on a road trip, or is it, you know, music that you can work to? Whatever you want. But three artists, they're going to make you your own custom music. It's never existed before and it's just for you.
Oh my God. Well, the first thing I was thinking, I have names coming up now, but when you were asking me this, I don't know if your brain does this, but sometimes I will literally forget what I like when asked. It's like everything draws a blank.
Oh, God. That's what this whole game is. I know. It's so, and it's an like, evil thing because I only forget when people ask me stuff. And then I make people do this on my podcast. So
it's gone.
Cruel. It's cruel.
Yeah, no, it's fine. But I just wonder if everyone has that feeling where people are like, what music do you like? And you're like,
music,
nothing,
music,
everything. I don't.
Music.
Hold on.
I know
just
that
give me
word
a minute.
From somewhere.
I swear I like things and you feel like a fraud. Like you say you like music. Now you
Dude, no.
Five
if
bands.
You turn the exact question back on me, I'd be like, what? What are you what? Why would you ask me that? Hello? What?
Yeah.
Sorry. Connection. Yeah. Something's wrong with the connection. Yeah.
Right. And I'm also just like, I take all these things so seriously. I want like the perfect answer.
Oh, I know.
It doesn't
I know.
Exist.
And that I'm and that's why I'm like, I'll also say like, this is extemporaneous. So it's like, this is what you're feeling today. And tomorrow your answers might have been completely different because
you're
not in the exact same mood for every single thing every single day.
Yeah. I mean, oh God. Oh, that would be good too. Okay. So the first person who popped into my head is Sinead O'Connor. A thousand percent. Yeah. I'm... such a fan of hers. I listen to her all the time and I just relate so much to her.
Yes.
Nina Simone was the other person who popped up. Nina Simone just means so much to me. I got into a lot of like jazz and blues artists as a kid because as a singer, I had an alto voice and women were not supposed to. You're supposed to have a soprano voice, and thank God for like soul, R&B, blues singers, because they're almost always altos. And I was like, oh, you've shown me this can be beautiful. You've shown me how to use this in a different way. And it's stunning. So yeah. Oh my God. Yes. And then I'm going to actually go today. I'm going to go Patti Griffin. I don't know if you've listened to Patti Griffin, but
absolutely.
Oh, Patti Griffin is like, good God.
Yeah.
I just, I saw her, years ago, my band was playing South by Southwest, and you know, one of the perks of playing South by Southwest is you get to go see other artists South by Southwest. And I went to go see Patti Griffin, and it's literally, I think I went by myself, like my bandmates went to go see somebody else, and I'm like standing there having this like deep emotional experience. There was some like drunk girl behind me being like, yes, play another one. Woo! And I was like, you do not do that at a Patti Griffin show. This is fucking church. Okay? You can't. Whoa!
I know.
Patti Griffin.
I know.
Show. It was driving. I was like, I don't want to get like arrested at South by Southwest for like clocking this woman, but it was, she was right behind me and I just kept doing the passive aggressive, you turn around and you just stare. Like, you know what you did and it had no effect. And, but that's all I think. It was like the one chance to see her, but I those are my three.
Love and agree with every single one and every single thing you said. Okay. Next category, let's do three movies that you can jump into whenever you want. You're not reliving the plot. You're just like in that space with those characters and the way that makes you feel in a positive way. Dip in, dip out. You're totally safe, etc. Three movies.
This is a tough one because I have become more of a TV show person.
Oh, we can do TV show. You want to do DTV? Let's do TV instead.
Yeah, because I don't really jump into movies. Yeah. I like will like get high and like get into the zone and be like, And
let's do TV shows.
I treat it more as an experience,
that.
I guess. Yeah, but TV shows I can jump in and out of. New Girl, I rewatch just so constantly.
Great.
I'm a big rewatcher just in general. I love, I know some people don't like it, I love seeing little jokes I missed.
Yeah.
Little line deliveries I didn't catch the first thousand times. I love it.
Yes.
It like lights up my brain. What else have I been? I know, again, that's one of those things where I'm like, what else do I jump back into? And also sometimes I jump back into it. I go through different waves. I'm trying to think of like right now. I really love King of the Hill. I really love King of the Hill. I'm obsessed with Luann. I'm obsessed with Bobby. Also, either one of those characters are like my dream voiceover role.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I want to play a 13-year-old boy.
Totally.
Or like the, like Luann is, oh my God, what Brittany Murphy did with that is just incredible. She made the weirdest choices. Oh, I love it. I love it so much. What would my third one be? I know I'm overthinking this, but
no, you're not. But I'm, also be kind to yourself. But also, I totally get it. I totally get it.
I know. I'm just like, there is the comedian joke machine is like, there's a pause in this. I'm going to make it a mix of TV and movies. And it made it really easy for me because I literally have the poster right in front of me as we're recording this.
Gorgeous.
But Practical Magic. I'm like the biggest Practical Magic fan.
Practical Magic.
You do? Okay. Oh, yeah. So much is making sense about this because I'm, but can I tell you? My coolest Practical Magic moment, we're not like friends, but I like to think she'd know if I asked her about it. But I've had a couple Practical Magic tweets go like super viral because I'm so obsessed with it. And Nicole Kidman once posted one of my tweets on her Instagram and was like, yeah, this is so great. And I was like,
that's very satisfying. Yeah.
And I made guttural noises she couldn't hear and rejects me.
Wonderful. That's wonderful.
I'm so obsessed with Practical Magic. It's a huge part of my identity, even though it does. It falls apart in the third act and you just have to, it doesn't matter.
I know.
It doesn't.
It's not about that.
You have to ignore that.
Yeah.
And it's only, it's just like the ants leave and it becomes about some guy.
I know. Yeah. That
none
it's like,
them are hot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I know. And like, there's so much about it, but you're just like, forget it. I think that's also why I can go in and out because you kind of don't necessarily want to watch most of the third act until you have Margot Martindale come in with a dustbuster or a broom and she says, let's clean house. Now you're back. Now you're back in.
Margot wins a stag every time. No doubt about it.
See, you could have been in there so much more. The third act could have been somehow about Margot Martindale joining the coven.
I'm in.
Ugh.
I'm in.
Yes.
I could not be more happy that you said that movie. Okay. Next category, it's romance. This is three people. I'm not committing you to a lifetime in this alternate universe with this person. It can be a character. It can be someone from a book, video game, whatever you want, living or dead, any age, any era. Three people that you want to have some romance or sexy times with.
This is another one I always forget. And I've literally thought about keeping a list just in case somebody asked me. Because sometimes people would be like, well, who's your type? And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, well, name three people from movies. I'm like, again, I don't know. And but then I would watch something and be like, ooh, okay. One of them I just thought of is, he was briefly on Law & Order SVU.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's like come out as like bisexual queer, which totally makes sense to me. But what is his name? Oh, Raul Esparza.
Oh,
ADA Rafael Barba. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. He's sexy.
Right. On paper, you might not, like, if you saw, like, a headshot, you'd be like, okay. Mm-hmm. But on TV, he's just, like, commanding and warm and kind.
I totally get it. I totally get it. Yes, indeed.
I do find Jake Johnson to be so attractive and so just appealing overall.
Yeah.
I'm just like, would I want to be in a relationship with Nick Miller? Probably not.
Right.
Ultimately, it's a rough ride. Uh-huh. I like, there's a lot there that would be challenging, but Jake Johnson, oh my God, he just seems so wonderful. And he's also been like married for a million years and like, you know, hopefully it's fine.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you're just like, he's been married for a bunch of years. He's a great guy. But then like every now and again, there's an actor and you like find out some weird stuff.
I know.
And it's like, that's, oh, my other one just popped into my head. Timothy Olyphant. Oh my God.
Wonderful.
Should
I put Jake down or do you want me to skip Jake and do Timothy and then leave you a third one?
I don't know if I can think of a third one. There's so many, but those are just the ones that are top of mind right now. But Timothy Olyphant is like, it's like rude. It's rude. He's so funny. He's so good on Santa Clarita Diet also.
What a delight.
So good on that show. Such a gift. And it's also very funny to me that I named three men when I'm like, that would not have been. But again, memory is so tricky. Just like, these are the ones that popped up because there's such a longer list of like, of women, but the ones that were top of mind really were that. But Timothy Olyphant, every time I watch him, I'm like, I don't know how you exist. He is my Your Doctor.
I'm
just like, you're so hot and you're so funny.
Yeah. Delightful.
And you seem nice.
Delightful.
It's a challenge. It's a real challenge.
Yeah. But yet accessible.
So accessible. I don't know.
Yeah.
How does he do it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. Next one. Three places in the world that you would like to have a second home if we could just like sort of teleport you there. And it doesn't have to be a vacation home. It can just be like, you know, you want to be in a bustling city elsewhere in the world, whatever you want. But three places. That's where your mansion, apartment, shack, or house will end up being.
I have not been to Italy yet. I really want to go to Italy. So I'm going to take a giant leap.
Great.
And say Italy, maybe Sicily, somewhere over there. And then this is not so much location based. Well, I guess it partly is, but I have had a lifelong obsession with owning the Practical Magic house. And like, and it, you know, as we all know, and I hate to be the one to break this to you, if you don't know, that was a fake house that was built just to be torn down. Tragic. Some people don't know that, and I always hate that.
You have to be the bearer of that news.
I really do, but it happens more than you think, because I talk about it a lot. But to have the ocean right there, and the fruit trees and the roses, and like, it was filmed in, I believe it's filmed in Washington, but it's like, wherever that would be.
Yeah.
Wherever that would be.
Great.
And also, Washington or Portland area could be nice, because, oh my God, the air there is like...
I'm putting PAC Northwest.
Yeah.
With our understanding of why and kind of what the,
of
what the requirements of that landscape where this house would be, or this apartment, or this shack, or this mansion.
Very much.
We understand the language that we're talking about when we say Pacific
Northwest. Yeah, Pacific Northwest, which house? Because,
Give me big trees, but also ocean. Like, you don't need to be in, like, palm trees. You know what I mean?
And just, like... peace. And like, maybe my nearest neighbor is not for miles, probably.
Yeah.
And then where else? I mean, you know, I've lived in New York City a long time, but I have not yet owned a brownstone. So let's just say that I live in New York City like that.
Great. Like that. we know what that means.
West
Absolutely.
Village brownstone. West Village cobblestones, bitch. I want cobblestones and then like those big windows that like people can even kind of see it. Or oh my God, is it the Gramercy Apartments?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That like I remember I was like Janine Garofalo and I were like walking through like the Gramercy area and she was like had told me that like some famous person lived in one of them and I was like like it just immediately was like who lived where and I was just like people live there like for real and they just like walk out of like that's what I want.
I love it.
Oh, and then I think they is that also the people who have their own key to the secret park that nobody else can go into.
You know they have the secret key. That's coming.
Well, I just was trying to think if that was the park. I think that is the park where they have the secret.
I think it is. I mean, there's definitely at least a couple of those. And I do feel like.
Yeah.
That I think you're exactly right. Okay. Amazing. All right.
Yeah. That's the one.
Three. Okay. Next one. Give me three like bands or people that you get to collaborate on something musical with. And they could be living or dead. You guys get to do some sort of musical collaboration together. I mean, I haven't seen Fiona show up on this list yet. Just saying.
I know. Well, because I only had three on that. I really thought that it would be, I mean, you know what? I will put her on because I have thought about doing a collaboration with Fiona Apple. I feel like we would make something really great.
I agree.
And my, that's like, it. My little kid self is like, it's like, is that okay? No, say this.
Yeah.
But I do feel like that would be awesome. And also, she's like collaborated with other people. I think that's what opened the door for me, where like I've seen her collaborate with other like artists. And I was like, oh, I would love that.
Yeah.
If we like met in the forest or something, wherever you meet Fiona Apple, I feel like it's the forest.
I agree. I'm seeing it.
And
happen.
I relate. Yeah. I know it. I think that's where she met like one of her friends. It was like she was on like a hike, and I was like, that is totally where you meet Fiona Apple. It's like your dogs meet.
That's perfect.
Who else? Oh my gosh, there's so many people. Oh man, I'm trying to think now, like especially like of people I haven't. I would really like to do. I grew up with like really loving a lot of. I would say Patsy Cline I think she is so incredible. I grew up loving a lot of like old country music and stuff like that, and I think she's rad.
What a badass.
And just like her voice was so cool. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if she wrote her own songs, but I remember when I was a kid, I didn't know how to read music, and I remember finding out that, but like I could still write music and make music. And I remember finding out that Patsy Cline didn't know how to read music either, and it made me feel like this is
this is
okay.
Cut to today, really cool. Where you're like, oh, most of the people I like don't know how to read music.
Right, don't know how to, but I did feel very like everything I did, like I played by ear and I learned, I taught myself every instrument. But like so often, you do hear these stories that are like. They studied with so-and-so, and I was like, well, I don't have money or access to study with that guitar great.
But absolutely.
But it's cool that that's their story.
Yeah, 100%.
And who else would I know? I'm like, I feel like, all right, I'm going to do it because I keep thinking about doing it. So I'm going to pull up my Spotify.
Do it. Absolutely do it.
There's a woman, Candy Staton, who did a lot of like soul stuff. In like the 70s and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I would love to do like a soul or R&B record. That was the first album that I made as a kid at home, you know, just myself was all like soul and R&B and blues and stuff like that. And, but her stuff is just really, cool. And she's got, I had started listening to, I think she's in the same category. I'm going to make this kind of a combo answer.
Sure.
As like a lot of like the 60s girl groups, like I was really obsessed with the Supremes and even a lot of like there are some like lesser known girl groups that like had like one single or they didn't really blow up, but they're amazing. And I like worked at a record store years ago and became like voracious and just listened to all these like rare 60s girl groups from that time. And I feel like that's it. That just covers so much that I just think that was a great, and like the Ronettes and stuff, like all that kind of.
Gorgeous. Yeah. Okay. Well, I put Candy down, but we also know that she's representing this sort of whole ideal. Okay. Now let's do like three sort of crafts, three skills that you have in this alternate reality we're building that maybe you don't have or haven't perfected in this reality. And the reason that I thought of that is I was looking at your ring and I was like, I wish I like made jewelry. And so then that led me to think like, oh, I want to know what Lane's answers will be. If it's like, oh, you don't know that I also have this, I'm like a woodworker or that I knit or whatever. And that like there, it's like the best, most like beautiful version of whatever you wish that you could make. Like you're amazing at it. Three.
Yeah, I immediately, like, I wish that I was just I could wake up and be just the most incredibly capable seamstress.
Great.
Because I have always had like really great ideas for clothes, and like a lot of the outfits that I made, like when I performed with It Was Romance, like my band and stuff, like I made my own outfits and I had somebody work with me to like stitch them and stuff like that, and made really incredible stuff. But I hate needing another person to do that. Yeah. I want to be able to just, even I finally did get a sewing machine. Somebody in my neighborhood was like, I'll teach you, like just a stranger in one of my Facebook groups. And I was like, this is cute. And then like, she keeps getting sick. She's like, sorry, I got sick again. My kid's sick again. And I was like, I get it. Maybe I'll never learn. I don't know. but I really, like, I have a whole pile of like, I want to fix this. Yes. And I want to do this. And I want to make something out of this. And if I could just wake up and know, that'd be great. I would like to embroider.
Oh,
I think embroidery is so cool. Mm-hmm. When something has embroidery on it, it is just immediately elevated.
Yes.
I think it's so fucking cool. What else do I want to know how to do? I don't think this is actually that hard, but I think it'd be cool to know how to make really rad stained glass. Not like the stuff that I did as a kid. Like,
I don't know if it is easy. I mean, stained glass is really expensive, which makes me feel like it's kind of hard. Yeah.
You know, you do that stuff that you get at like the craft store or whatever, where it's just like a piece of plastic or a piece of glass and you like paint on it.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't feel like that's the same.
No, I agree.
I want to be like a stained glass maker. I make like incredible lamps.
Hard agree.
And that's how I talk when I have that skill. Do you want one of my lamps? I make them. They're incredible. Yes.
Okay.
I want to be her.
Perfect. Okay. All right. Last categories. Next category. Let's do three. Okay. I got a couple of things running through my head, but this is along a similar line, but could be a completely different type of answer. We're going to give you that sort of like extra magical room in your house where you open a door and it doesn't matter what the like square footage technically would be. This is sort of magical. So if you want to open it up to the, you know, garden of practical magic, but that's like a room in your house, great. But if you want it to open up and it is, you know, a meditation room, great. If you want to open it up and it's a craft room, great. If you want to open it up and it's like a three-story library with like ladders that you have to climb up to get your books. You know what I mean? Three.
This was the fastest answer for me.
Awesome. Three rooms, extra rooms in your house. Hit me.
I at least knew one of them. Great. And you did kind of guess it. That room in Practical Magic where it's all the plants and the stuff they use for herbs, I want that room so bad.
I'm putting like greenhouse.
Yes, apothecary greenhouse.
Yes. Okay.
I've been trying to make one and it's not easy, man. It's a whole fucking thing. I also want, a lot of these are going to be from Practical Magic. It's just they did a great job.
They did.
The kitchen, the huge kitchen, all the copper pots and the fucking Nancy Myers kitchens, some of those.
Yeah.
Just that are like huge. No matter where I've lived, my kitchen is always like,
same.
It's fine.
Same.
But it's never, right? But it's never this, whoo, like open. I could have 1,000 people here. It probably won't.
Yeah.
Just so much space and light.
Yes.
And plants and like, ugh, yeah, just the witch's kitchen, man. And then I'm glad you said the stairway. I was watching Clueless the other day and I was thinking about how incredible that staircase is. And even in like The Haunting of Hill House, like the that really big staircase, the winding staircase. Like, I almost never see those. I want
some room of that
in my home that has huge winding staircase, and it's just like you're at the bottom. I think I saw like a video with like Sharon Stone or something, and she like has one of those where it's just like this immaculate, just it's grand.
Yeah.
There's no other word for it. It is fucking grand. Yes. And then like whoever comes in has to like take a moment. You're like, oh.
Absolutely.
And then they walk down it and you're like, oh. Like it's just such a vibe.
Yes, it's such a vibe. It's such a vibe. I love it. It's funny you would say that because I have a like a sort of recurring dream about a staircase like that where I'm in some old, it's like an old mansion that I'm like on a tour of, but it's like evening and that staircase exists, but you can't go up the stairs. and I just go up there anyway. And then it turns out that the second floor is haunted. I don't know what, but in a way where I'm like both scared and super excited.
And
that's
about
like a weird recurring dream of mine. So I'm so on board for the
Is it a recurring dream because it's a wish?
I guess it is.
Because you're like, you want to go to this haunted,
I guess it is. It's
place?
So thrilling. It's such a thrilling dream. I'm always so excited when I wake up and I'm like, oh my God, I had that dream.
Yes.
Great. Staircase room. Love, love, love. Okay, final category. Yeah. Let's do three things that are sort of metaphysical or paranormal or something that you're safely bringing into this reality in a very like practical magic, in a practical magic. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, three things where it's like 100% ghosts are real. They're not out to hurt anyone there, but they are there. Or, you know, absolutely Sasquatch was real and was lonely and that's sad. Or, you know, give me some paranormal that we bring in and confirm in reality, but it's not like going to hurt anybody.
I'm going to bring in ghosts. Ghosts are real. I think ghosts are cool. I lived in a graveyard for a long time, and that makes me sound like I was like crawling out of the dirt, but it was like the graveyard was right there, and it was like, and I really had to like confront a lot of like, oh, I've got to confront some of the stuff that's going on here, and like, how do I talk to these ghosts and do that? So I'm cool with ghosts.
Okay, great.
Ghosts can come in. I'm on the fence about aliens. I don't know. There's some people really love it. I'm not a like aliens are real. I genuinely don't know how I feel about it.
Let me give you this one because I feel like our brains are very similar in so many ways.
Yes.
And I'm really just bringing this out of nowhere. But what if, I'm not giving this gift to everyone, but what if you, and maybe me if you want, what if we could float? Do you know what I mean? I don't need to be flying like thousands of miles in the sky looking down at it. I don't need to be an airplane, but you want to let me float? Great.
That was the goal of when I saw The Craft and it was like light as a feather, stiff as a board. I was trying to make that happen so bad because I wanted to float. I want to float. So, okay. And I mean, for the third one, if we're bringing in these kind of things like that, I want teleportation so badly.
Absolutely.
I'm making it real. The coasts are too far away. I have so many friends in LA that I want to be like, can you come over today?
Yes.
And then just do.
Yes. See?
That's it.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay, great. All right. I'm going to ask you to tell me when to stop.
Okay. Stop.
Okay, great. All right.
I don't know if I did that too
soon. No, it was perfect. It was perfect. I am going to use that magical non-math to come up with your 100% guaranteed alternate reality MASH existence. This is a perfect opportunity. First of all, we can sit in total silence because, again, Julian is wonderful and will edit it for us. But also, it's a great opportunity for you to tell people where to find you and what to and about the books and anything else that you would like to tell people about so they can support and love on Lane Moore some more.
My first book is called How to Be Alone If You Want To and Even If You Don't. And highly recommend it, especially if you had a real weird childhood and have struggled to connect with people because you've been hurt a lot. Very much recommend it. My second book is called You Will Find Your People, How to Make Meaningful Friendships as an Adult, because once you do all the work on yourself and figure all that stuff out, then you have to like figure out how to actually have friendships with people and heal from those things. And so both are out right now. The You Will Find Your People paperback actually comes out next month on April 30th. So it's very exciting. You can get it in either one. And then I also just wrote an ebook and audiobook for Scribd/ also known as Everand called You're Not the Only One Fucking Up, Breaking the Endless Cycle of Dating Mistakes. That is, I really wanted to write because I've so often when I looked back at my life, I was like, why are there some mistakes I just kind of keep making or some things I can't break? And I felt like cooler people than me or something didn't do that. And so like I interviewed other people and found out like, no, we all have that. There's always something like that we're kind of sticking with.
There's always something
like nobody is perfect. And then, yeah, you can come see my comedy show Tinder Live. I'm doing a big tour later this year that I'm really excited about. Nice. We should have tour dates soon. I'm going all over the country. The last time I tried to tour, I did it myself, and it happened to land right when the pandemic hit. So I'm excited to not obliterated. This is a huge do-over tour. So you can look for those on my website, lanemore.org, and you can find pretty much everything there, tour dates. My podcast is called I Thought It Was Just Me. You can find that there. You can find my music, my tour dates, kind of all of the things. I draw my own merch and stuff. I have like t-shirts and stickers that are cute. So that is, that would have been one of my skills, but I've really developed it. I was like doing it as a kid. And then I fortunately had friends that were like, you're really good at this. You should try it. And let me tell you, when you like didn't grow up having somebody necessarily do that shit, it has made all the difference. Honestly, like me creating Tender Alive, I had the idea and then it took my roommates at the time being like, that's brilliant, go make it a thing. And I pitched it that night and it was like selling out immediately. Like I really needed somebody to be like, this is a good idea, go after it.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that's, it's so powerful. It's so powerful. If you've like been through some shit.
Oh my God, 1,000%, 1,000%. My friend, I got some pretty exciting results.
Thank God.
Boy, yeah, this is really good. you will not be disappointed. I feel like this is definitely of a piece. Everything sort of fits together in this kind of amazing way. First of all, I want to congratulate you on your beautiful apartment in the Pacific Northwest, giving you touches of all of those things we discussed that were the reasons that you picked being in a location up there. It's an apartment. What can I tell you? Hey, you don't know. You might have like an amazing magical neighbor. It might be a duplex. You know, an apartment can just be, maybe it's your apartment that you own and you, no one else lives there. Do you know what I mean? Maybe it's like in a little apartment house that's, you've turned into your magical land.
Yeah, and it could also be really luxurious. Like, I always laugh when I think about the fact that, like, Beyonce, has an apartment, and you're like, that's not an apartment.
Oh, I'm sorry. The Dakotas are apartments? Are you fucking kidding me right now? Exactly.
That's what I mean. Exactly. It's like Taylor Swift's apartment, and I'm like, I know. I mean, I know it technically is, but like,
Exactly. Yeah. So let's say you leave that open. You leave it because you're fine.
It's a penthouse.
First of all, it's covered with some of your beautiful stained glass. So that already feels like, you know, this is grand. We're talking about something very grand. I'll tell you where else are some stained glass touches in your apothecary greenhouse.
Yes.
So that's happening. Yes. All of this, everything that we've talked about so far, I guarantee you when you end up collaborating with Fiona on something, she's going to be like, I'd love to write a song in just sitting in chairs in your apothecary greenhouse. I feel like that's going to bring us something beautiful. So
it really is.
That's
and our
happening.
Dogs will be there and they'll hang out together.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. Did you do you also have an album that Sinead O'Connor just like wrote for you? She had access to the contents of your heart and she wrote you this beautiful album. That is what happened. Sorry. Are you experiencing all of this with the delightful and sweet and wonderful Jake Johnson? You certainly are. You certainly are. However, if you want to, you can also jump into, Practical Magic. I'm telling you, all the Practical Magic stuff came true. So you can jump inside of Practical Magic whenever you want, on top of all of this other stuff, and you could fucking float. So all of this exists in this continuum of like, all makes sense. Like this all fits perfectly and beautifully together.
I'm a witch living in the Pacific Northwest making albums with Fiona Apple and Jake Johnson is like kind of into it.
Yeah.
I feel like he'd be like, this is a little out there, but I support you. I don't know how witchy Jake Johnson is.
Yeah. He'd be like, you know what? I don't have to be there for every moment of your life because that's not a healthy relationship.
And I'm married.
I love who you are.
Yep, but I'm having an affair with a young witch who lives in Portland.
It's gorgeous. I mean, this is glorious. I would take any and all of this, so I'm very proud and excited. And this has been such a joy. Thank you so much, Lane. There's a lot of crossover in I think how we approach the world, and so I'm very excited to have had you on, and I look forward to people doing the crossover and overflow of stuff that gives them the feelings that what you do does and hopefully a little bit of what I do does. So I'm glad you're out there.
Thanks.
Yeah, same. Yeah. And everybody else, because I always forget after a second that there are other people listening to this.
Yeah.
Talk to you next time.
Yeah, that's right.
Talk to you next time on the podcast. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi. All you need was a peck from her. Maybe we should trade for some physics or black market spines to go and get us back. Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows
supported
directly
by you.